Blog Talk Radio.
Family, yes, our roots began in Africa, where we celebrated and shared many of the treasures that we do not share now. Sovereignty, you know, our own production of our own food, building of our own castles, traveling on our own land. Yes, our roots began in Africa, which we do not share now. Welcome to Dare to Win, your weekly program that has a sobering discussion of the economic and political plight of black people and the global cooperative economic model that provides an exact model and method of gaining economic and political self-determination. We are building that global machinery for our economic freedom and sovereignty and the methodology to pass it on to future generations. And we'd like you to be able to do with that. If you wish to join in tonight's conversation, you can dial in at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. And my name is Brother Shabaka. I'm a member of ULU. And joining me tonight, we are pleased to have one of the founding members of ULU, Baba Hekima. Baba Hekima, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well, brother. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Hopefully you can hear me. All right,
oh, yeah.
So today you're going to be talking a little bit about liberated minds, building liberated communities for the liberation of our people, but I understand that you have a special guest. Who will help you discuss that subject. Would you like to bring him in and introduce him to the family?
Yes, we're going to be talking to our brother Tani Okojo. And when you mentioned the theme, Liberated Minds, Building Liberated Communities for the Liberation of Our People, on the third Thursday, our Dare to Win program, we want to focus on our model. We call it New Ujamaa, and certainly I count you and Tommy and many of the others on the call, the liberated minds, but what we're going to talk more succinctly to is some of the things that we do to liberate the community. So, Kojo or Tommy, I don't know how long. I think I met you probably more than 50 years ago at the print shop. that's been a long time.
That's a long time ago.
A long time ago. And many changes and iterations and growths and sometimes calamities in the middle of it. I'm going to want to talk with you about a number of things. When we talk about liberated communities, one of the first things I want to talk to you about is several years ago, there was a talk show in Wisconsin, and from what I understand, the station that the community had gotten familiar with in terms of promoting unity and movement in the community, the radio changed its format, and we were about to lose talk radio on the local level in Milwaukee. But because of some things that you had prepared for and initiated, you were able to, along with other people in the community, to fill the gap. You want to talk about that first a little bit?
Yes, sir. What happened was we had been monitoring this whole FCC thing because that I think it was probably around the late 80s, early 90s, the FCC had made a special dispensation for low-power FM radio stations, and they decided what band areas they had to be on, what the power had to be, and what they had to serve in terms of communities. And we had began to look at that and see if there's a possibility of us fitting in. Later, the major radio stations that are running like 100,000 watts of power were claiming that the low-power FM radio stations were interfering with their signals. The radio station low-power FM was probably, I think you can only have 7 watts of power.
Mm-hmm.
And you only can, and it only gives you about roughly about a 6-mile radius, 6 or 7 mile radius, depending on how well you place the antenna and, you know, a number of other variables. But so they allowed them to put a moratorium on it while they had an opportunity to study whether or not that was the case. And they never really announced when you would be able to get this low-power FM. And so we just kind of kept monitoring and monitoring till they opened it up a little small window. And myself and several other people were able to apply for it and actually get it through, as you remember, through Inner City Development Project.
Okay.
And we began to do, put the system together and put antennas up in the community and start the process of producing radio programs. Two of the people that are very instrumental in that was Michael McGee Jr.
Mm-hmm.
and this other brother, Amari Brown, and they were very helpful in putting this together, providing some financing, providing content, and it went well. But because of the many people that applied, we shared the station with a church organization, so we would have 12 hours of programming, they would have 12 hours, and we just kind of split it between the two. Our station was WKKG. And it was like 100.5, I think, and the church part of it is still broadcasting at this point. So we've shown some long term sustainability in that area.
Yeah.
The net effect, as you said, was that we could do talk shows. We produced a number of talk shows. We promoted a number of businesses, and we were able to keep good information out there. Until, of course, NOV began to do almost totally talk, and it just kind of filled a gap.
until some other things could take place. So I'm pretty proud of what we were able to do and, you know, how long it sustained itself. I think it's probably, they're probably broadcasting at this point, and it's probably been, wow, at least 10 years now.
I would say about 10 years. Yeah, good. What was the coverage area? Was it pretty much the what we call the black community?
It was. We centered right there in what is about the center of the black community in Milwaukee. And with 7 mile radius, it pretty much got much of, you know, most of the black community, if not all of it. And then what we did as a sister station, we set up an internet radio station that could still provide coverage to folks that were outside of the coverage area.
Okay.
So they could connect on the on their computer or their phone and listen to broadcasts. And then we created a little one of these little microcomputers called a Raspberry Pi. And we had guys that actually could walk around and go to events and stream the events. We had hotspots, you know, the hotspot Raspberry Pi and the streaming software. So we were going to Juneteenth and basketball games, you know, several events, just kind of talking to people, talking about the events so that we could still remain very active and mobile in the community.
Beautiful, beautiful. Now, how did you get from being a printer to being involved in low-power electronics? Was that self-study, or did you go back to school?
Yeah. Well, I went back to school, but not for that. I mean, I did go to school for engineering, but the things that involved that was not necessarily engineering. I think it was actually the printing was the segue. We went from the point, and I'm sure you remember, we had the offset presses and the letter presses and the manual typesetting machines. And so we were part of that transition where it went from electronic and computerized typesetting from what we used to call keyline and paste stuff, where you did everything by hand, to the computerized thing. And having to, you know, we actually bought the first computerized typesetting system in the state. And we had to learn. That was Windows 2 and Windows 2.5 and all that. So we had to learn how to do all that. And in learning that, we became very, very computer savvy. And so the transition to the low-power radio part of it was a little bit of engineering, but a lot of it was putting together computerized components to make that happen.
Yeah. Well, all of that's been in terms of community, because your print shop was a part of the community. Obviously, the radio station is part of the community. I want to mention one thing before we get to the broadband. One of your passions and something that you're looking forward to is teaching coding, but you want to be mobile. What's that going to look like?
That's going to be looking like that very soon. We did, we started out, it's been about 7 years ago, doing coding camps in Milwaukee and in Atlanta, and we did a couple in Memphis with it. We even in Indianapolis, we did some coding camps. So we began doing that, where we taught young folks coding and robotics and electronics. We did that whole mix so that they would have some kind of foundational experience around coding and around building things, building devices. The goal is to bring them, you know, kind of give our young people requisite skills and then allowing them to go out on their own and have the skills to express themselves in that way, because we know we teach them football, baseball, basketball, and they express themselves in a way that makes it innovative. Entertainment and other things, the same thing, they become very much innovative in that. But the foundational things that often elude us have been around technology. And so our goal was to give our young people, those that we can come in contact with, a strong foundational base in technology, and then let them expand it based on their interests and their creativity. The thing that it led to was, because often we did, well, let me change that. We then started teaching them how to build drones, and that still integrated all those things, because we put together a drone club, and we wanted to create competitions within the city and within other cities, which then that was continue to stimulate their passion for technology. And, you know, we're doing it out of houses and other places, and it just kind of occurred to me that we need to find a way to do it in a mobile way. So the organization that we form is called Learning Planet, and the drone organization is called Ascension Drone Club. We decided to kind of put resources together and purchase a kind of medium-sized bus. Probably can hold about 14 students. And that would allow us to begin to put this thing on the road in that whole Atlanta metro area. We're probably maybe 60 to 75 days away from completion now. We've been kind of steadily working on it,
okay,
raising funds and then putting things together. And so what it will look like is, like I said, 14 spaces set up with a generator and batteries, which allow us to go any place we want to go, provide power to the computers, the components, the little small computers that we use, as well as the electrical devices that we use. And we'll teach coding, robotics, drone making, and about anything else that we find that our children are interested in, and just move from there.
Okay. So on the bus, there will be these 12 to 14 stations where
mm-hmm.
They're not cubicles necessarily, but at least desktop space, huh?
Yeah, it's desktop space that will hold 12 to 14 students. We've actually fit 14 chairs in there and where they can comfortably work. And each station has a laptop. Each station has a multitude of electronic devices like servos, resistors, capacitors, diodes, everything that a student would need. Servos, motors. All kind of stuff, just
okay.
Things that they can kind of work together and play with and learn. And then we'll also teach them how to do it.
Yeah, I'm seeing that these drones, I think they even have leagues where people fly drones and through an obstacle course, and it's become a fairly big thing, huh?
It has become a fairly big thing. I was laughing because I was watching a drone race, and now they've coined a new phrase for the guys that are flying the drone. They're calling them e-athletes. So that was a little funny to me because they just sitting down with goggles on, but they become e-athletes.
But it does
take a lot of dexterity.
It does.
It's not an easy thing at the speed that they're moving at.
But, you know, I forget the brother's name that's a Formula One driver out of the U.K.
Oh, yeah. I was just talking about him today. Not Anderson. Hamilton.
Yeah, Hamilton.
Lewis Hamilton.
But he has a brother that's, I don't think he can walk, but he's involved because of that dexterity in the hands and the motor skills that they have. And a lot of that they learn from manipulating these devices that you're talking about. So,
absolutely. The drones that we were building, they have a capacity to move probably about 65 to 70 miles an hour.
Okay.
And so you have to have some dexterity to maneuver those things.
I got you. And I would imagine that's really exciting for a young person.
Yeah. I've seen the excitement. They enjoy it.
You enjoy it too, I bet you.
Yeah, I enjoy them doing their thing. It's it's an honor and a privilege to work with young people and try to, and when you see the lights go on in their eyes,
yeah,
that you know they got it. That's the greatest pleasure anybody can have.
And then they can develop those skills and, you know, who knows where it can take them. And certainly it can take them to where they can become independent if they're good at it and make a living and become an asset to the community and their family. So that's great. Now, I just say for the go ahead. I'm sorry. I cut you off.
Oh, I'm sorry, brother. What I was going to say is the other aspect of that is, then and it's my hope that through this whole training and technology exchange that they come together and find things that they can manufacture in the community and sell to other communities and do it in a cooperative way,
right,
where it's community owned, it's based in our community, and the, and you can begin to grow and employ community folks, train community folks. That's really what the goal is, and it's kind of looking at that that whole or that Mondragon kind of model. And I don't know if people are familiar, but there was a group of folks in 1955 who got out of college or a trade school, and they were going to go into business. There's five of them, and someone persuaded them to do a co-op, and they called it Mondragon, and they began to do this co-op. They first sold heating units, and then they graduated to a number of other things. But now they're 300,000 co-op members with several different types of businesses, and they, you know, they're in the $8 billion, $9 billion range in terms of their sales and what have you. And they also do classes. People go to. It's in the Basque region of Spain, which had at that time the same demographic of the average black community. And so they were able to elevate that whole community through a cooperative effort using the technology of that day to find ways, creative ways to manufacture and sell products.
I see. Yeah, and they developed very early a banking system, university. Yes. They own the largest supermarket chain in their part of the world. They have housing complexes, and, you know, and they're noted for machine parts, machinery, marketing components for aircraft, automobiles, and so they've been very successful. And that's part of the reason I invited you onto the program this evening, because a lot of times when we talk about community-owned cooperative enterprises, we don't think about tech field. You know, we think about a restaurant or, you know, a shop or here or there, but there's no limit to the number of things or areas of business that we can go into. And certainly that, that tech field is expanding exponentially. And we definitely want to be on the cutting edge in that area as well. Now, Shabaka, did you need to do any announcements before we continue? Well, I'll announce it for him. You know, as we go, if there are brothers and sisters who are on the phone, join us. You can press 1 on your keypad, and we'll know that you're trying to get in with a question or comment. Of course, the majority of the brothers and sisters are listening to us from the Internet. And if you're on the phone side and you prefer to go out on the Internet, of course, you can go to our website, usliftingus.com, click on the Ulu Radio tab and just follow the instructions, or you can go to the bottom of the page and you'll see a Dare to Win a button and follow the instructions, and you can listen to us out on the Internet. And all of these shows are recorded, so you can go back next week or next month or next year and listen to it. The theme, of course, Liberated Minds, Building Liberated Communities for the Liberation of Our People. and take note of the date, and you can, it's out there, so you can see it ongoing. We got a little bit of noise in the background, so hopefully anybody whose mic is open, you know, just know that noise is coming through. You surprised me maybe less than a month ago with a new project that you're involved in. And again, we talk about the theme, Liberated Minds, Building Liberated Communities for the Liberation of Our People. And I instantly saw that this new project that you are envisioning and probably putting some energy and resources towards would enhance the quality of community, because we want to build community. So tell us a little bit about the idea that you're engaged in, or the project that you're engaged in relative to broadband.
Well, probably about a year or so ago, somebody approached me. In fact, a couple of entities approached me about doing something with broadband, with Wi-Fi. Over the last 10 years, my occupation or my main business has been doing information technology, which involves broadband and Wi-Fi and other things of that nature. And so someone asked, because of those skills and our interactions in other areas, if I would be interested in working with this Wi-Fi project. And at the time, I kind of shied away from it. And it took me a little bit of time to just kind of think it through. It just so happened that this project is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it's in an area that is named after one of my mentors, Bernice Lindsay. And so I kind of thought of that as possibly, if I could do something, it would be a good legacy for her, and at least honor her. And I mean, because she did a lot of stuff for the youth community, that particular community. And so so the goal was to try and provide Wi-Fi for the entire Lindsay Heights area in Milwaukee, which I think that's probably somewhere around 200 houses, which is a pretty large area. And so we started doing analysis of what had to be done and what we could do in terms of how to make it meaningful. And so we came up with a plan to do this Wi-Fi network, but we had a kind of a unique way that we plan to deliver it, so that we can kind of deliver it to all the folks. And we're trying to work through that now. But we've gotten past our proof of concept, so we know we can do it. So what we want to do is provide not only broadband to the community, but also to provide a centralized surveillance system where they can have volunteers or hire security folks that monitor the community, and so that they can make the community safe without having to employ a lot of the police department tactics to do it. And so that's really what we're engaging in. We're putting up towers and connecting the mesh, as they call it, so that we can begin to provide this Wi-Fi strategy. And so far, it seems to be coming together. We just got a few hurdles to get over, but it's moving pretty well at this point.
Well, let me ask you this. Is this something that's duplicatable in other communities?
It absolutely is. It's definitely duplicatable in other communities. The only thing is that we have some things that we probably are doing that are kind of proprietary relative to us, our own creativity. And so we will be working with communities in that way, because there are certain things that we want them to do and not do. The thing we do not want to do is to make this a surveillance system that's not controlled by that community itself. That would not be a good thing. So, but we're trying to put together policies and standards for those that we, find the opportunity to work with, so that we make it a safe community for that, and we render it more of a community-controlled system as opposed to something that is controlled and implemented from somebody outside of the community.
I say. Now, in terms of duplication, now the people in that area, instead of AT&T or Verizon or whoever they would get their broadband services from, they would get their services from this program, and they wouldn't have to have the other services. Is that correct?
That's correct. They get their services from that program. They could get, once it's fully fleshed out, we can probably offer just about everything that Verizon would offer, because we'll have the same or any other network of that nature, because we have the same kind of network involved. But it's going to be, you know, it's a process of time. And it's, but our first thing is just the thing that we can do immediately is provide community-wide Wi-Fi. And for those that want to subscribe to it, they would get comparable speeds for significantly less than what they would have to pay these other services. And next phase will probably be that we can provide them with landline phone services at a much lower rate, so that at least, you know, there's some kind of phone going on in their house. Third phase would be security. We'd be able to provide them with greater security, greater safety in their homes and monitoring. And then the last phase will be some unique things that we're trying to develop now that we'll be able to offer. But we're not in a position to talk about those just yet because they're still in development.
Well, there's a community out in L.A. called the Merck Park, and some of the futuristic thoughts in that community is being able to have smart corridors where there's a video where a person goes and picks up an old payphone, but you don't have to pay. And they just say, I'm on the corner so-and-so-and-so, and I need a ride. And coming down the street is this little bus. Nobody's driving it. It's a part of a network, a system. Person jumps on it and goes to 5 blocks or 10 blocks that they need to go and get off. You know, you may not be wanting to talk about it, or it may not be even in the discussion. But I could imagine once you establish the network, there are any number of things you could do with it.
Yeah, well, there's that whole discipline, and I know people are seeing this IoT all the time, and that means Internet of Things. And so the whole understanding behind that is that you can form networks that can control pretty much anything in your community with the right broadband set up and the right monitoring and in the right program. And it all starts with having a data center that can deal with that. I mean, there's all kinds of potential. Street sweeping cars. I mean, just about anything you can imagine. So that falls under what we've been calling safe communities, because I think you can develop smart communities that become safe communities, but the emphasis is on safety and service. And so that's the next phase. And if we don't do it in our own communities, then some interloper from another community will do it and provide lesser services, and we'll pay very high prices for it.
And this could be scaled in such a way that revenue generated from it can be the inputs for something else that needs to occur in the community.
Absolutely. I mean, this is because the community project and process, it easily lends itself to a cooperative organization because everybody's stakeholders in this.
Okay. Well, that's the ULU model. We haven't talked to you in a little bit about the changes that have occurred in ULU. We have a 501c3 nonprofit mothership, but underneath that, we've got another co-op element that's a business incubator, and then we'll be spawning business enterprises themselves that will be co-ops. They will be owned and controlled by the community, a larger group. And so we envision a systematic way of empowering communities, and as you mentioned earlier when you started out, of generating revenue not only from our community but from wherever there's an opportunity to generate revenue and income, and moving it through our community but retaining enough so that our communities can grow, and not only for now but for the future. And this whole tech side is something that some of us have been afraid of, but because of your years of involvement in that area, I think when you mentioned this idea to me, you mentioned 5G, and I said, I know some of us are afraid of 5G, but tell us why we shouldn't be afraid of 5G.
Well, you know, there's been all kinds of rumors about the 5G signal being carcinogenic and all that. I mean, it's actually lower power than the 4G and even the 3G. It's not emitting quite as much power. It needs more towers. But it's no different than any of the other signals that are beaming past us every day. There's probably hundreds of different kinds of signals all around us. And not to mention just the signals that just come off of the power lines that go down the street and to our houses and all that. So there's been studies, and I haven't seen a study yet that said that it was not safe, that there were some major problems with it. Now, there are people, and this is a fact, that there are people that are sensitive to electromagnetism, but those are kind of far and few between, but it does affect people. I mean, we are electromagnetic bodies, and there is some effect that electromagnetism can have, but generally speaking, our body can rid itself of those effects. And we generally will be fine. We don't have any issues with that. I mean, we probably have more issues with air and water than we do with electromagnetism.
Wow. Okay. Now, I know the area you're talking about is relatively small. Can you envision this service being provided to a community as large as the community that you talked about that receives the radio signal?
Yeah, absolutely. The what we're working with right now is developing, for lack of a better term, sales. Because of the size of the community we have to deal with, we'll have to deal with probably only one sale. But you can do multiple sales and deal with much larger community areas. So that makes it much easier to do. So with the one sale, we could almost cover the same area as low power FM, almost, not quite.
Wow.
But with multiple sales, we can cover entire city. And wow. If we do this, and that's all part of our mesh. So you have to create a kind of a sophisticated mesh network. That's kind of the proprietary part, because there's a lot of configuration And there's a lot of tuning that has to be done in order to make that work properly. But it's definitely doable. And again, you can cover an entire city if you wanted to with the technique, providing Wi-Fi, providing other services, Internet of Things services. So it can be scaled up and down.
Okay. And a fee-based service.
Yes, sir. And because of the way we are doing it, the initial investment is not astronomical. It's something that the average community can do. And the fee base can be much, much lower with better service, at least comparable service. So it's not like you're paying less and you're getting less. You can get more for less in this particular situation because it's community controlled. And then you can structure it in such a way where those fees go into a bigger pot for expansion to make this thing more community viable and provide more services.
I see. Now, you getting your signal from what, satellites?
Ultimately, what will be partly satellites, partly other data centers, and okay, through leasing. Because the problem with satellites, if that was solely what you did, you would have problems with latency. Satellites are about 12 miles above the ground, and or more. And because of that, all those signals are fast, you still get a latency. That's why a lot of times you look at the news and folks are talking, and some correspondents at the other side of the world, it takes a couple of seconds or half a second for them to respond. That's because that beam is going up and bouncing back down. So satellite is not ideal as your source. So we'll still be using some of the traditional means through data center connections and leasing lines coming into the community. And then we project it outward.
Okay. And from a security standpoint, or from a, I guess it's like what's happening in Israel now, Big Brother can cut you off when they make that decision to cut you off, huh?
Well, that's why your secondary is satellites.
Okay. Okay. Good. Family, if there are any questions or feedback for those of us that are on the line, just press 1 on your keypad, and Brother Shabaka will see you and bring you into the discussion. Us Lifting Us is enthusiastically, energetically involved in creating what we call the creative communities. More succinctly, Hulu-based communities or UBCs. We still got noise in the background. So if your mic is open, be cautious of the noise that you're creating. and so the discussion this evening is right down our alley, so to speak, in terms of us having broad thinking in terms of the things that we can do to enhance community. And most of the ideas that we would have don't involve safety. And I'm glad that's a good part of what the discussion is around offering the broadbands or Wi-Fi service is the safety of the community. Are there any other things about the project or any other things that you contemplated that you want to share?
Excuse me for a minute, Baba.
Yes.
Yeah, Baba. Yes. Yeah, let me before you jump to that next topic, I want to ask the brother a question. Are you experiencing any regulatory problems as you proceed based on you know, the area in which you're trying to build up?
No, we're not doing any, having any regulatory problem. There are some licensing things that you do have to do. What we're doing is that we have purchased the licensing for what we're doing. We've investigated what has to be done. There are, and then there's some, what can I say, that, some inspection/authorization things that have to be done, because you have to have someone to do that for you that's independent. But we're in the process now of identifying somebody within the community ranks that we'll send them to the class so that they can be the ones to administer that, so that as we move in other areas and we need to have that person come in and do that consultation, inspection, provide us with that final license, they can do that, and we're using our own people. But other than that, there are no regulatory issues.
Once we start moving,
that we'll start to have some competition, or we might be viewed as competition, and we'll have to deal with that, because that's always a possibility. You have to think through those things and how you'll handle that, and we're beginning to think through those things to make sure that when that time comes, we're prepared.
Yeah, and certainly it helps to have people in local government or state government that are on your side, because with the permitting and any number of things, folk can slow the project down. I know that here in Atlanta, there's one Ulu member who's involved in housing development, and he has, it's called Kijiji Atlanta. Kijiji is Kiswahili for village, and so on a little over, I think it's 40 acres by 47 acres. He's building about 100 homes, but the hoops that he's got to go through to get the roads cut, to lay the sewage and water in, the electric lines in, so. It really helps to supported by folk in government, and I would assume that you have some friends in that environment. And we had an event here in support of the residential development process, and there were politicians in the kickoff, bankers in the kickoff, so. You need to be connected and pay attention to the relationships that you form. So that's certainly a
problem. Yeah, that's very true. I have some folks. One of the partners in this project that's based in Atlanta is one of those people that is very politically savvy, and has a tendency to reach out to the politicians and all the rest to kind of get their support. And so she's been here and has begun that process. But also the organization that we're working with is well connected too. And so they have their local aldermen and some of the other alder persons, as well as the commissioners and state representatives that represent areas in this community that this might affect. But that is important. It's very important.
Yeah,
The nice thing about this, though, is that it's a fairly new frontier, and we haven't had a lot of regulatory concerns yet, because there's only three or four things that you have to do, and we've kind of gotten through those. We know what we have to do. We're kind of prepared for those. Again, technology is a little bit different because it doesn't affect infrastructure in that kind of extreme way. You know, cutting roads, excavating, water—that's a whole nother thing. We don't have to have civil engineers. We just got to make sure that from the—I guess the only regulatory concern is making sure that we got stable towers, that's not going to come down, and having someone inspect those and making sure in communities that we're not endangering anybody. But other than that, you know, we're pretty free in terms of regulatory concerns. It's from a local municipal, county and even state standpoint, we've checked those boxes.
Beautiful. Extending to the theme that we have for this evening, liberated minds building liberated communities for the liberation of our people. The more communities that we can focus on, as you have focused on the community that you're speaking about there in Milwaukee, but focus on those communities and to infuse into those communities as many elements that would enhance the living in that space, create jobs, provide additional goods and services, produce revenue that you could use otherwise, and then have those communities connected on a national level and later on a global level, where the transfer of technology, the transfer of human capital, skills, knowledge, and also have a central bank. You don't have to, it won't be a typical bank, but have a central fund that if there's a good idea that would enhance the livability, the security, the welfare of a local community, you can fund it based on combined energies of any number of communities. And so with ULU, that's essentially our model, is utilizing practices, safe practices for aggregating the necessary capital, human and material capital, and then doing our due diligence and focusing on something that would enhance the community, funding it, creating the jobs, and then hopefully it would be like your project, that it would return some revenue that could be plowed into the process and allow the community to grow and empower based on the various economic moves that you're making. We know when communities are empowered in that way, the communities begin to think of themselves differently. And there would be things that they would tolerate when they don't sense that they got their act together, that they don't tolerate when they know they got their act together. And that's so important, because part of what you're focusing on is young people, especially with the coding thing that you talk about. But what does it mean when a shorty, you know, 8-year-old, 10-year-old, 6-year-old, 15-year-old brother or sister in the community knows in their spirit that their parents, that their aunts and uncles, that the business owner, that the pastor, that the politician has not just made eloquent speeches, but that they've actually built components of community and did it in a way that's excellent and productive, such that things happen. And so when people come from communities that are intact like that, it impacts them in an awesome way. It actually creates a new person. So I know that's part of your thinking. When you even expressed it a little earlier, in terms of what it means for these young people. But just expand on that a little bit before we got about 6 minutes before we close.
You know, I think that the most important thing that we can do with technology and young people is to make sure that we give the technology to them. One of the issues that I have with technology, and I've watched Microsoft and Google and other organizations come to our community and offer these kinds of seminars or classes and things of that nature that we just flock our children to.
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't understand is that their purpose is not to convey technology to our children. Their purpose is generally to poach, to find out who our best and brightest are. And they'll put resources behind them because they understand when they come of age that they will belong to them or to their corporate structure or the general technology corporate structure. And the ones that are left behind are just left behind. And so it's important for us to empower our children with not only the technology, but with the understanding that they have the right and responsibility to transform the community that they live in. And so it gives them a different charge when they're looking at technology. They're not looking at it from the standpoint of, I'm going to get this tech, I'm going to get me a good job, and I'm going to get on up out of here. They're looking at it from the standpoint of, I'm going to get this tech, I'm going to figure out something that I can do, and maybe some other folks that will do it with me and build this community. That's a whole nother charge. And that's what's very important to me about conveying it. And also that they get the technology not from someone that doesn't look like them, but somebody who's right here in the hood with them. They're showing them what to do and how to do it and giving them some direction, but not stifling their creativity or trying to direct them in a way that's not in their best interest and that they feel is not in their best interest. So the control of this technology, the control of this knowledge by those of us in the community is of paramount importance. And if we don't do it that way, then we'll just continue to take our best and brightest. And those that want to work in that corporate structure are fine. I'm not trying to put nobody down. But there are a whole lot of us, a whole lot of young people who got huge intelligence but never get a chance to have that developed. And it's our job to make sure we can do that.
I say. Well, if there's anybody listening out there on the Internet and listen to our program and you're not a member of ULU, I want to encourage you to go to our website. You already at our website if you listen to Blog Talk from our website. But click the Join tab and become a member and become a part of process. And I kind of joke about it, but I mention it as often as I can. There's a brother in our community, a broader community, George Frazier with FrazierNet, and he jokingly said that he had a conversation with God. And he said God told him to tell us that he ain't giving us nothing else. He ain't giving us no more. He essentially said we got all that we need. All, in other words, what you're saying and what I'm saying is that we just need to get busy in formatting the gifts that we already have to build the liberated community and the liberated spaces and space on this planet that would accommodate us commensurate with who we are, the parent people of the planet. Brother, I really thank you for being on with us. And, I'm sure, you know, as the projects and other projects become further developed, there may be opportunities for us to come back and check in with you. And, of course, we know that the opportunities for development in the Caribbean, in Africa, and all across this country, it's just ripe for us to grab a hold of technology and be liberators with that knowledge. So thank you, brother, and I'm going to turn it back over to Shabaka as he closes us out. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you coming on and sharing. I hope, family, that you was able to get some information, some messages from the discussion that took place. We're going to have another program next week, same time, 9 p.m. Eastern on Thursday. We'd like to have you join us. And Baba, always a pleasure to join you, and particularly the distinguished guest that you bring on. So everybody, take care of yourself. Tune in next week, and we look forward to Dare to Win.
Ashe.
Ashe.